I'd like you to take your Bibles out tonight, if you would, and turn to the book of Philippians. That's where we're going to be studying tonight, looking in particular at Philippians chapter 1. Philippians happens to be one of my favorite books of the Bible, and as we start our study tonight, I want to establish maybe just a little bit of context for what we're studying with about four things. So let's just refresh our memories with a little bit about Paul's life at this point in time. The church at Philippi, if we find it here, there you go. The church at Philippi was established about 52 AD, and this was more or less about 20 years after Christ died on the cross. This church in Philippi is up and running and going very, very well, and this is perhaps, some scholars think, maybe the church that Paul loved most. And we think that sometimes because in all of his other letters, Paul begins by establishing his apostleship. And the word apostle just means the sent one. And so very literally, Paul was a church planter. He would go into these places and he would study with people. He would establish the church. He would build that church up. And then he would move on to the next place. So Paul here, in all of his other letters, says Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ. But as he begins Philippians, this is the only letter where he uses the word doulos. And some of you guys see that on our youth calendars, but doulos means servant, or literally a slave. So his relationship with the church here in Philippi was so good that he just uses this word when he says, I am a slave of Jesus Christ. The second thing I want us to think about is that Paul writes this letter in about 62 A.D., or about 10 years after the church here in Philippi was established. And he writes it as a thank you letter. But what was he saying thank you for? As you read through the book, you'll see that Epaphroditus, he delivered an offering to Paul. The church there in Philippi knew that Paul was in great need and where he was right now. So he took up a collection, and then they drew straws to see who got to take the collection to Paul. And actually, Epaphroditus volunteered to take this to Paul because of the love that he had for Paul, for him. And he risked his life. He actually almost died trying to get this offering to Paul there in Rome. And this is significant because Paul never wanted to receive from churches. He never wanted to be taking things from them. He always wanted to be the giver. He didn't want to be a burden, and so he always worked on the side, as a tent maker and that kind of thing, to help pay his bills, to help fund his way. And this was the first time that he had ever humbled himself and actually received a gift from the church like this. And so he wrote this letter back to them as an overwhelming way of saying thank you. Thank you for this gift and for everything that you've done for us in this work. Third thing, if you look in verses 3 through 11, we're not going to look at them tonight, but if you want something to read maybe before you go to bed or something to study this week, in these verses, Paul, we see the depth of his love for these Christians here at Philippi. I would encourage you, take some time to read these a little bit later. And lastly, I want us to remember that Philippians was written from prison, from a Roman prison. While Paul was there, he was awaiting potential execution. Execution could have happened at any time. And we have to keep this in mind because everything that we study in Philippians, it needs to be seen through these lenses. That Paul was here, he was in prison, he could have died at any moment. He was locked up 24 hours a day. He was chained to a Roman soldier. And according to Acts chapter 28, it was like this for 2 years. So this wasn't just an overnighter, day and night, for 2 years. That's a long, long time to be chained to someone else and for that to be your lot in life. This was a very extended stay. But as Paul writes this letter, there is one word that describes it better than any other, and that is joy. The word joy. We read about it in Nehemiah in our scripture reading this evening. But in the midst of all of this, as Paul is sitting there, as he's chained to this Roman guard, Paul is able to write to the Philippians and encourage them with the joy that he has. What's crazy to me is that there's one place that Paul always wanted to go and preach. Do you remember where that was? It was Rome. Rome was the center of the known world at the time. It was the hub, literally, you know, kind of the middle of the wheel. It was the place where you get on the little airplane and you fly to get on the big airplane, and from there you go to all the corners of the world. Rome was the key. And Paul knew that if he could reach the Romans for Christ, that from that place the gospel could be sent all over the world. He believed that Rome was the key. He dreamed about going there as a preacher, but instead he went there as a prisoner. In other words, his hopes and his dreams, they were stripped out from underneath him. And yet he is able to write this positive, joyful letter to the Philippians. And there are several of us here that I think that this could speak to tonight, because I know that if you're like me, you woke up this morning wishing that there was something different about your life, that there was something you could change. If only it was this one thing that were different, if only these couple of things were different, if only this series of events had happened a little bit differently in my life would be so much better right now than it is. Or I thought by the time I got to this age, this stage in life, things would be a little bit different. And there may be a few things there in the back of your mind this evening that are nagging you, stuff that you just can't get out of your mind, that are robbing you of your joy, that are robbing you of the joy that you can have in this moment. Are there any of those feelings in the room tonight? I venture to say that there probably are. I want you to think for a minute and maybe write this down if you've got a pen and a piece of paper with you. What do you wish you could change? If you could change something in your life, what would it be? Or, I really wish I could change... ... A word or two, maybe tonight, as you sit there and write. Some of you might need a book to actually sit down and write all of the things that you wish you could change in your life. But I want to challenge you to think about Philippians based on the thought of what you wish you could change. What you wish you could change in your life. Because we've all had bad days, don't we? We all have those. Did any of you have one this week? You nod your head. I had a bad day this week. Seemed like a couple of them. If you did, I want to share a story with you. Hopefully as you're writing some of these things that you want to change. I found this. This apparently comes from a Florida newspaper. But it goes like this. A man was working on his motorcycle on his patio, and his wife was in the house in the kitchen. The man was racing the engine to the motorcycle, and somehow the motorcycle slipped into gear. The man, still holding on to the handlebars, was dragged through a glass patio door and, along with the motorcycle, dumped onto the floor inside the house. The wife, hearing the crash, ran into the dining room and found her husband laying on the floor, cut and bleeding, the motorcycle laying next to him and the patio door shattered. The wife ran to the phone and summoned an ambulance. Because they lived on a fairly large hill, the wife went down the several flights of long steps to the street to direct the paramedics to her husband. After the ambulance arrived and transported the husband to the hospital, the wife uprighted the motorcycle and pushed it outside. And seeing the gas had spilled on the floor, the wife obtained some paper towels and blotted up the gasoline and threw the towels into the toilet. The husband was treated at the hospital and was released to come home. And after arriving home, he looked at the shattered patio door and the damage done to his motorcycle. He became despondent, went into the bathroom, sat on the toilet, and smoked a cigarette. After finishing the cigarette, he flipped it between his legs into the toilet bowl while still seated. The wife, who was in the kitchen, heard a loud explosion and her husband screaming. She ran into the bathroom and found her husband lying on the floor. His trousers had been blown away, and he was suffering burns on his backside, the back of his legs, and his groin. The wife again ran to the phone and called for an ambulance. The same ambulance crew was dispatched, and the wife met them at the street. The paramedics loaded the husband on the stretcher and began carrying him down the steps. And while they were going down those stairs, accompanied by the wife, one of the paramedics asked the wife how the husband had burned himself. She told them, and the paramedics started laughing so hard, one of them tipped the stretcher and dumped the husband out. He fell down the remaining steps and broke his arm. Now that is a bad day, isn't it? That would be absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible. But the question that I want to pose for us tonight is this. Can we be joyful no matter what? And the answer to that is absolutely. Absolutely. And the key, I think, is found in this little book of Philippians. Because everything Paul had dreamed of had been stripped out from under him. And somehow the man is still full of joy. I wish that I could be more like Paul in my life. But how do I get to that place? Let's start tonight with a very fundamental and foundational thought tonight. We've got to learn to ask the right questions. Instead of asking why, you know, why God me? Why God this? Why? It goes on and on and on sometimes, doesn't it? We've got to start saying what. Instead of asking why, we're going to learn to start saying what. Because that's exactly what Paul did. The first thing that we're going to ask is this. Now what? Now what? Now what is God doing? What is God's purpose? What does God want to show me? Now what does God want to do through this? If you will, look in chapter 1, verse 12 of Philippians. Paul says this. He says, "And I want you to know, my dear brothers, that everything that has happened to me here has helped spread the good news." What, Paul? Let's try it again. "And I want you to know, my dear brothers, that everything that has happened to me here has helped spread the good news." Does that make sense? Instead of asking why, God, why am I in these chains? Why is this the way that I came to Rome? Paul was asking what? And we see exactly what God was doing, don't we? To the untrained eye, this looks like a tragedy. But if you have eyes to see, you'll see what God is doing. To the untrained ear, this sounds like a tragedy. But to those who have ears to hear, we see that God has a purpose. Because what has really happened to me has really happened to advance the gospel. It's what Paul's telling us here. And the word advance or spread here is the word prokope in Greek. It means it's a pioneer advance, kind of breaking through the brush, clearing the way. Paul was literally blazing the trail for the gospel there in Rome, in his chains, every day for 2 years. Verse 13 and 14. He says, "For everyone here, including the whole palace guard, knows that I am in chains because of Christ. And because of my imprisonment, most of the believers here have gained confidence and boldly speak God's message without fear." What was he saying? He's saying, "I'm chained up 24 hours a day to a Roman soldier. But each and every one of them knows why I'm here." And others are saying, "Because of what he's going through, we've got to get out there and preach with more passion." And here's what's crazy, is that the chains that the Romans intended to restrain Paul, God actually used to release him. The chains that looked like they would bind him, God uses to set him free. Paul wanted to reach Rome, right? And what better to do that than by reaching its leaders? And who were the leaders of the time? These soldiers. These soldiers who happened to be chained up 24 hours a day to the Apostle Paul. Every 6 hours, he got a new prisoner. And you have to start asking yourself after a while, who is the real prisoner in that situation? What are the chains in your life right now that are binding you? That thing that you wish you could change. I want you to think about this. The very thing that restricts you may be the thing that God uses to set you free. Because God can do awesome things, can't He? He can turn our obstacles into opportunities. God has the power and the ability to take what we consider setbacks and use them as setups. Now what has to be in our vocabulary? Because the thing that we think binds us could be the very thing that releases us. I want us to think about the story of Miss Eliza Hewitt. She was born in 1851 into the Christian home of Zariah and James Hewitt. She was a teenager during the Civil War and somehow managed to keep her focuses on her studies and graduate valedictorian of her class. Her love of children led her to become a school teacher. And in 1887, while teaching at the Northern Home for Friendless Children, she was hit by one of her students. He slammed his slate board across her back, causing severe injury. And a slate board, guys, is what they had before laptops. The doctors placed her in a heavy cast, rendering her virtually immobile for 6 months. And when the cast was finally removed, the doctor told her to go take a short walk in a nearby park. It was a bright, sunny day, and she was absolutely overcome with joy. After she got home, she sat down and immediately wrote the hymn that we sang earlier. There is sunshine in my soul today, more glorious and bright. Her injuries were severe enough that she was never able to teach again. And instead, she devoted herself to Bible study and hymn writing and has blessed us with hundreds of other hymns, including When We All Get to Heaven and My Faith Has Found a Resting Place. God empowered Miss Hewitt with a special gift and something that would have been considered a setback by probably everyone in this room tonight. Something that could have restrained her, God used to release her. What are you chained to tonight? What problem, what relationship, what physical problem, maybe it's a financial problem, are you chained to tonight? That thing that we might most like to change may very possibly be where God does His greatest work. If you feel like you're a prisoner of something, you have to remember, you, like Paul, are no ordinary prisoner. You're a prisoner with a purpose. So when something happens that we may not understand, the first thing that we're going to say is, now what? Say it with me. Now what? The second thing that we're going to learn to say is this, and you have to have a little attitude to make it work right and to make it sound right, but is this. So what? All right, let's try it. With all the attitude you have. So what? So what? Paul learned to say things, to say on things that don't really matter. So what? Who cares? To understand this, let's think a little bit about what's going on right now. There are preachers out there, and some of them are preaching just to gain popularity. And there are others that are out there that are preaching just to make a profit, just to make money for themselves. But listen to what Paul says in verse 15. He says, it's true that some are preaching out of jealousy and rivalry, but others preach about Christ with pure motives. They preach because they love me, for they know I have been appointed to defend the good news. Those others do not have pure motives as they preach about Christ. They preach with selfish ambition, not sincerely, intending to make my chains more painful to me. All right? Paul is writing about it. Paul acknowledges it, acknowledges that it's going on. But look in verse 18. What does he say? But that doesn't matter. So what? Who really cares? What difference does it make? The important thing is this. Let's finish that verse. Whether their motives are false or genuine, The message about Christ is being preached either way, so I rejoice. And I will continue to rejoice. Others are out there preaching with wrong motives. So what? The gospel is being preached, and that's really what matters. The Greek word here is, what does it matter? So when you run into something that you're in your life that starts to steal your joy, so what? The truth of the matter is that there's some things out there in life that are very important. And when we run into those things, what we have to do is this. We have to take it to the Lord with intensity, integrity, and passion. But generally in our lives, the things that bother us are things that don't really matter. It's the small stuff that gets us down. It's the little things that, I don't know about you, but I go home cranky about. It's the little things that cause fights in marriages, and it's the little stuff that makes us wig out. And with those things, we have to learn to say, so what? So what? So how do you decide if something's big or not? You have to ask yourself a couple of questions. What will this matter 100 years from now? If it doesn't, so what? Who cares? What does this really matter in eternity? If it doesn't matter in eternity, so what? You have to ask yourself, what is really important right now? And if it doesn't matter, so what? If it does, address it. Let's try it on a couple of things. I want to see your faces. Your car breaks down. What do you say? So what? So what? Is it a pain? Yeah, it's a pain, especially on days like today if it's rainy and it's cold and the wind's blowing. But does it matter in 100 years? No, it doesn't matter. You don't really like your job. What do you say? That wasn't nearly as enthusiastic. So what? So what? Are you going to let that steal the joy from your life? Or are you going to see that maybe God has a purpose for you with what He's doing? The little things in life that sometimes get us down. Is the state of being joyful no matter what possible? Absolutely. It absolutely is possible. And we're not talking about happiness tonight because happiness and joy are two different things. Happiness in our lives is based on happenings. If things in our lives are going really well, we're happy, right? If things aren't going so well, we're not so happy. Joy, true joy, is never based on happiness. Joy is based on God and God alone. How do you get there? How do you get to this state of true joy? Now what? What do you want to do, God? What are you trying to do in my life? So what? If it doesn't matter, it's not going to get me down. This is kind of the level one of a joyful life. And I am absolutely nowhere near this right now. You can ask Susanna. Nowhere near this. But I think there's another level out there, and it is the ultimate joy. And there are a handful of people, I believe, that live there. I believe that this is where Paul lived, and this is where God wants us to live. Remember, Paul was in prison when he was writing this, facing potential execution at any moment. And in verse 21, he writes these words. For to me, living means living for Christ, and dying is even better. For me to live is Christ, is living for Christ. If I'm alive, I'm going to live my life for Christ. But if I die, that's even better. Absolutely even better. This was written by a guy facing death. And in the next verses, he confesses that he doesn't really know what to choose. In verse 22, he says, but if I live, I can do more fruitful work for Christ. So I really don't know which is better. I'm torn between two desires. I long to go and be with Christ, which would be far better for me. But for your sakes, it is better that I continue to live. How to be joyful no matter what? The ultimate joy in life is that win-win situation when we can stand in the face of death and say, for me to live is Christ and to die is gain. And I'm not there yet, and I'll tell you why. Because I still care too much about the small stuff. I still care too much about things that aren't going to last. And I still get wrapped up in things that don't matter in eternity. But with the help of God, I pray that in my lifetime, I'll be able to say that no matter what, for me to live is Christ, and to die is even better. I don't know where you are tonight, but I hope that joy is a part of your life. I hope that one day we can all have the joy that Paul had in his life, so that we can stand and say, for me to live is Christ and to die is gain. If there's anything that we can help you with tonight, please come as we stand and sing.